Namo myoho renge kyo. Hi, friends. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your practice. I hope this finds you in good health and secure. We're going to start chapter, 23 today of the BDK translation of the Lotus Sutra, the ancient accounts of Bodhisattva Baisajvyaraja, or as we know him, the Medicine King. So, oh my goodness, there are some names in here. All right, not even going to bother trying to say these things and embarrass myself. Oh, it's like in Sanskrit or ancient Indian, whether this is coming from Sanskrit, some form of Sanskrit, or Gandhari, or probably Pali or Sanskrit. It's like in order to name a person, they would collect all of the qualities and references that they think apply to that person, make a sentence, and that's your name. These words are just insanely long. Nakasatrara jasam kusasum mita bijna. Oh my goodness. Okay, so yeah, Medicine King. So anyway, just a moment. Well, should I do this here? I think I'll keep this for a separate video. There is something I want to talk about, though, and I don't want to forget. Dealing with other Buddhists of other schools who still today practice early teachings as though they're better. It's a point that I'll just say this. I've made this point several times in these 1,300 videos that I have on this channel or more. Shakyamuni never taught something different. See, there's this attitude in the world where some would say, well, these are the true teachings, and Mahayana, well, that's a bunch of guys who got together later and made it up. Simply not the case. Just outright wrong, okay? But, you know, that's the arrogance of thinking they have achieved something that they have not. The thing is that if you do study across the board, you will find, at some point, you'll find that he was teaching the same things, but it's like teaching a child to walk, right? Put one foot in front of the other, shift your weight thusly, right? All of these steps, sorry for the pun. And ultimately, they learn to run, but then you have to, if they want to be competitive runners, they have to learn how to run all over again because they got to pick up their knees further. They got to know how to reach forward with their feet. They've got to have a different posture, learn how to train their breath, right? So if you want to be an Olympic runner or, you know, what shall I say, your maximal potential for running, let's put it like that, right? Then there's one way to train that. But to say that, no, you guys are making all that up, we still believe you have to put one foot in front of the other. That's the truth. Okay. He taught to the capacity of the people he was teaching. Right? We're not 18 months old anymore. We're not 4 years old anymore. We're not teenagers anymore. We're in full stride. So if we want to achieve our maximal potential now, don't teach us how to put one foot in front of the other. You're retarding us, right? Why don't they get that? Anyway, sorry, I just had to say something about that. It's not that the teachings are different. The teachings are the same, but they are addressed to the capacities of their audience. And the capacities of our audience today is not that of 3,000 years ago when communications were different, when mythologies were different, when mysticism was, right? Oh, okay, enough. Sorry. I don't know why I had to get off my... I guess I was thinking, I can't be the only one who's run into that. And if I don't share it, I'm kind of crippling my audience, you know? I mean, you're going to run into this. So think about that. Thereupon, Bodhisattva Medicine King addressed Buddha, saying, "O Buddha, what does Bodhisattva Medicine King wander in this Saha world? Why does medicine wander in this Saha world? O Buddha, this Bodhisattva Medicine King has performed hundreds of thousands of myriads of kotas of nayutas of different and arduous practices. Splendid, Buddha, I entreat you to explain it even a little so that all the devas, nagas, yaksha, everybody here, humans and non-humans, and also the assemblies of the bodhisattvas who have come from the other lands and these shravakas will rejoice on hearing it." So what does this mean? He's not talking about a particular person walking around doing these miraculous things, right? Or these acts of extreme devotion, right? You may remember the story of the Medicine King, you know, offering, burning his flesh in exchange for just a few words about enlightenment from Shakyamuni Buddha, or the Buddha. And so this is really, again, remember the personages thing. This is, Buddhism is about the mind. Let's start there. And so these are influences, right? So Medicine King represents a certain, a depth of devotion that sees enlightenment as not only the a priori aim of the engine of life, but the maximal accomplishment, the complete and perfect enlightenment, right? We hear it in so many different ways, as valued above all else. Even, you know, this flesh body, right? This to be enlightened has greater value than this functional apparatus that that provides for an emergent sentient mind to be aware of. What are we here for? What, right? The big question, why am I here? You're here to perceive the ultimate experience of being here. It's really that simple. And the only reason that we're not doing it from the start, just, wow, we're here, right? Look at all this amazing instantiations from potential. It's just astounding. You can't take it all in. And that's exactly why we're not experiencing it. Because samsara, our state of mind in as samsaric beings, is so busy collecting data, information about everything, trying to catalog everything with this strange motivation that somehow if we just catalog everything, we will be. We're already being, but we're busy constructing some kind of how will others see me? What possession, what do I represent when I walk in a room? Huh? If I wear the right thing, if I look the right way, will I represent awesomeness? What's awesomeness? 40 cars, 100 cars, a super special car? Is that what makes me awesome? We're so glued to the physical that we forget that the physical is just, it's just happening. It's not owned. It's not permanent. It's just a flow of manifestations of potential. So if we could just shift our attention to being one of those manifestations of potential along with everything else, wow, we're there. It's just a little, it's not even a full step. Right? It's just, it's like looking at a mirror and then getting closer and closer to the edge of that mirror and then, oh, look at that, no mirror. Look at everything happening. Mirror, stuff, me, no mirror. Oh, wow. It's as simple as it gets. Who am I? Why am I here? What are we doing? Where am I going? It's all happening. The only reason we don't get that constantly is because our samsaric attention, our monkey mind, or whatever you want to call it, is so glued to material. Right? They're having the same problem with physics and science and particle physics and all. You know, they know mathematically that in quantum reality, things are just in and out all the time. But then there's this stuff we call particles. Well, we know they're not, you know, marbles. They're not particles. They're forms of energy, and they're constantly changing. But stuff. They're having exactly the same problem. Oh, my. So, Bodhisattva Medicine King. Wow, I came back. Medicine King. It's about that tendency, yeah? And it's not bad. It's not, the tendencies aren't bad. The point is, don't get glued to them. They're all manifestations of potential. They're all wondrous. Everything is that way. To be experienced. The moment you try to hang on to it, possess it, you're in samsara, right? So, and you know, this medicine king guy comes up a lot, right? Because in earlier Buddhisms, Theravada and so on, I mean, we hear about these horrible stories of monks burning themselves alive in city streets as some sort of protest, like they're making a statement. Yeah, they're making a statement. Very samsaric. What happened? Oh, my goodness. How far will you take that delusion? It's so sad. Okay. So let's see what Shakyamuni has to say. Then the Buddha spoke to Bodhisattva Nakasastra. I've got it. What's his actual translated name? I'm going to look at, and this is something I recommend you do. I'm going to look at Leon Hurwitz's translation of the Lotus Sutra. And, look at that. At that time, the Bodhisattva, beflowered by the king of constellations, Nakasastra, it makes sense, Kumasastra, yeah. But that's so much easier to say. I'd rather say beflowered by the king of constellations. Sensei Kormo, the name, one whose super knowledge have been beflowered by the kings of constellations, which I take to signify one of those superhuman faculties have been... Oh. There's a really Western translation. Blessed by lucky stars. Okay, so this is who's addressing Buddha, is beflowered by kings of constellations, right? And so Buddha is going to answer him about Medicine King, which I've already said isn't a specific person. It's a depth of devotion, right? And why does it continue to exist among us in this moment, right? Because one would think, that might have been appropriate for early teachings, but now we're not going to burn ourselves. But with our attitude and intent, yes, Buddhism is about the mind. We may forego our relationship of preciousness about our bodies, right? How our hair looks, our makeup, our teeth. It's not about that. It's about our experience of Buddhaness. Much more amazing and useful and real than all of this other artifice. Just burn it, mentally burn it, get rid of it, right? But do we really need to keep hanging on to that kind of thinking? Nietzsche would say yes, yeah. But let's see what Shakyamuni says. So he says, Bodhisattva, beflowered by the constellation kings. In the remote past, beyond kalpas, as immeasurable as the sand of Ganges River, there was a Buddha called... Another one of these. Oh, my goodness. Kandrasura. Anyway, there was a Buddha, completely enlightened, perfect in knowledge and conduct, well departed, knower of the world, unsurpassed, tamer of humans, teacher of devas and humans, Buddha. With this Buddha, there were 80 kotas of great bodhisattva mahasattvas and an assembly of great sravakas, as many as the sands of 72 Ganges rivers. Okay? The lifespan of this Buddha was 42,000 kalpas, and the lifespans of the bodhisattvas were also equal to this. In this land, there were no women, no hell dwellers, no hungry ghosts, no animals, no asuras, and no calamities. The land was like level, the palm of one's hand, and made of lapis lazuli. It was ordained with jeweled trees and was covered by jeweled canopies. So it was a cool place. Although without women, I'm not sure it could be all that cool. But again, keep in mind, to make a statement like there were no women, especially now in the 23rd chapter of the Lotus Sutra, you might think, did you forget what you were doing there, Shakyamuni? And again, these are translations. But if you understand by now that this is all a mix of hyperbole, storytelling, inculcating the ideas and cultures and the capacities of the people of his day 3,000 years ago, very, very misogynistic, right? Women in this context would not be seen as intellectual equals or even potential Buddhas, right? Even their sexual, and I'm going to say this, ladies, don't be insulted, but even their sexual function was something that belonged to men, and in these early times were seen as nothing but distraction and kind of annoying responsibilities. But we have to keep them around because we want to beget sons who can become Buddhas or merchants or whatever, right? So, yeah. Yeah, a very poor light shed on women. So the fact that he includes them in here is simply to say that at this time, with this particular Buddha, this personage, with all of his followers, were unfettered. Do you see? Unfettered by any, problems, any stresses, any... Everything was golden and beautiful. That's all that's saying, okay? Do not take it literally. This world was filled with jewel vases, incense burners. There were platforms made of seven treasures. There's that seven again. For each tree, there was a platform, and each tree stood away from the platform a distance of no more than a bow shot. All the bodhisattvas and shravakas sat under these jewel trees. On top of every jewel platform were hundreds of kotas of devas who played divine music and sang and praised. And the air was just sweet with wonderfulness, yes? Then the Buddha expounded the Lotus Sutra for the bodhisattva Sarvarupa Samdarsana and numerous other bodhisattvas and shravakas. Bodhisattva Rupa Samdarsana devoted himself entirely to severe practices. He got down to it. Following the teachings of the Buddha, he strove and wandered up and down in the single-minded search for enlightenment. There's that word again, single-minded. For a full 12,000 years, his feet must have been worn out. And he attained the samadhi called the Sarvarupa Samdarsana. After having attained this samadhi, he rejoiced a great deal and thought thus, I have attained the samadhi called the Sarvarupa Samdarsana, entirely because of the power I attained through hearing the Myoho Renge Kyo. I will now pay homage to the Buddha. The Buddha of that day, and the Lotus Sutra. Immediately after he had entered the samadhi, mandaravas and great mandarava flowers and finely powdered solid and black sandalwood fell from the sky, filling the air like clouds and raining down upon the earth. It also rained the perfume of sandalwood from the inner seacoast of Mount Sumeru. With this quantity of perfume, six drams, of which equaled the worth of this entire Saha world, he paid homage to the Buddha. Having paid homage to the Buddha, he emerged from samadhi and he thought this. So this was all his experience in his mind when he had attained this enlightenment, yes? I have paid homage to the Buddha using my transcendent power. This is, however, by no means equal to the tribute of offering my body. In other words, this enlightenment is so overwhelming that whatever pleasures of the five skandhas, remember? Pleasures of the world, the Saha world, they're irrelevant. I have no need for them anymore. For a full 1,200 years, he inhaled the fragrances of sandalwood, olibanum, frankincense, clove, aloes wood, and glue trees, and drank the fragrant oil of the Kampaka flowers. He then anointed his body with scented ointment in the presence of the Buddha of that day. He covered his body with divine jeweled garments and with the fragrant oil, though through his transcendent powers and vows, he set his body alight, which illuminated worlds equal in number to the sands of the 80 kodas of Ganges rivers. At that same time, all the Buddhas in these worlds praised him, saying, and I'm going to pause again. That literally says he lit himself on fire. But wait, read the rest of the sentence. Please. He illuminated worlds equal in number to the sands of 80 kodas of Ganges rivers? How bright of a fire was it? I've seen some pretty bright fires. Right? Even fires from a starship blowing up in the air, right? We've seen some pretty big bright fires. Do you think he's actually talking about himself lighting himself on fire? Do you? Remember the analogies of the great ray of light emanating from Shakyamuni's forehead? The little tuft of hair? Right? It's a mental construct. Folks, please. So he reached enlightenment. He thanked the Buddha-ness, the enlightenment, and the teaching of the Myoho Renge Kyo that allowed him to accomplish, that provided for him to reach this enlightenment. And now, in his spiritual sense, his mental sense, he was now going to propagate enlightenment, enlightening. He's going to enlighten, he's going to influence a huge amount of people. With his life condition, his enlightenment, he will spread this light. It's almost literal. If you don't get caught up in the storytelling. Splendid, splendid, O son of a virtuous family. This is the true perseverance. This is called the true Dharma, offering to the Tathagata. It stands no comparison. Even if one were to pay tribute with flowers, perfumes, necklaces, burning incense, scented powders, ointments, divine silk banners, canopies, perfumes of sandalwood from the inner seacoast of Mount Sumeru, and various other things like this, it stands no comparison. Your commitment to propagate this truth has more value than any of these Saha world things. Even if one were to offer one's kingdom or wife and children, O son of a virtuous family, this is the supreme offering, propagating Myoho-renge-kyo. This is the highest and best of all offerings because you offer the Dharma not to people, to Tathagata, everyone whose mind you influence toward their own achievement of enlightenment, is paying homage to, a debt to, and increasing the experience of Buddha-ness. It's not about Bob, Frank, Ted, Alice. It's about enlightenment. This is why when you meet strangers, you should right away implant in your mind, they are Tathagata. They have the potential. All they need, you're going to love this, all they need is a fire lit under their butts. Oh my goodness, there's the medicine king. Right? Oh, there's so many people I wish I could convert with this story. Having spoken these words, all became silent. Whom? His body was alight for 1,200 years. Yeah. I don't think a human has enough fat in their body. I don't care if you're a 400-pounder to be alight for 1,200 years, right? But your influence could last that long. Duh. After this period passed, his body burned out because he had paid tribute to the Dharma like this. Bodhisattva, medicine king, was reborn after his death in the land of Buddha, his own Buddha land. He was born spontaneously sitting cross-legged in the house of the king Vimaladatta. Then he immediately spoke these verses for the sake of his father, saying, O great king, you should know that I, in an instant, attained the samadhi called Sarvarupa Samdarasani Sana, in the place where I wandered, and practicing with enthusiasm and perseverance, there it is again, this is about our life state propagation, bodhisattva practice, yeah? I set aside this, my beloved body, I have paid homage to the Buddha in order to attain the utmost wisdom. Released myself completely from samsara. There it is, the Four Noble Truths again. These are glorious stories, and they capture the imagination, but all in service for this simple teaching. Simple to understand, deeply profound and difficult to experience. After having spoken these verses, he addressed his father, saying, The Buddha is now in this world. Having previously paid homage to the Buddha, I attained the dharani of understanding the speech of all sentient beings and heard 800,000 myriads of kodas of nayutas, of verses and tens of billions of verses, hundreds of billions of verses and tens of thousands of billions of verses of the Lotus Sutra. It's constantly present in his mind. O great king, I will now once again pay homage to this Buddha. We'll go a little further and then we'll stop for today. Having spoken this, he sat on a seven jewel. Why do I keep saying seven? Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Not Myoho, not Renge, not Nam. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Seven. and ascended into the air as high as 7 tala trees. Having come before the Buddha, he bowed until his forehead touched the Buddha's feet. He praised the Buddha in verse with his 10 fingers pressed together, saying, "Your countenance is rare and wonderful. Your brilliance illuminates the 10 directions. Once long ago I paid you homage. I now come to behold you again." Thereupon, the Bodhisattva, having spoken this verse, addressed the Buddha, saying, O Buddha, is yet in this world. Then Buddha of that day said to Bodhisattva Sarvapurusa Sardarsana, Medicine King, "O son of virtuous family, the time of my Parinirvana has come. The time of extinction has come. I ask you now to prepare my bed. I will enter Parinirvana tonight." The Buddha said again to Bodhisattva, Medicine King, "O son of a virtuous family, I entrust you with the Buddha Dharma and all the Bodhisattvas and the great Shravakas as well as the Dharma of highest complete enlightenment, the Lotus Sutra." Well, Dharma is the experience of that enlightenment, right? The Lotus Sutra is the method for instantiating it, the what you would call the method of samadhi to accomplish this perfect enlightenment, right? "I also will entrust you with the 7 jeweled, all jeweled trees, world, jeweled platforms, and the devas who are servants in great manifold cosmos. After my Parinirvana, I will also entrust you with all my relics. You should distribute them far and wide and pay them homage. You should also erect a great many thousands of stupas," which Nichiren did in the form of a very simple to acquire and enshrine mandala. That altar you see behind me is my stupa. It holds the great tool of Myoho Renge Kyo to instantiate my Gohonzon mind. It's in a protective enclosure that pays respect with offerings of water, incense, plants, right? Do it exactly as Shakyamuni's teaching. Having addressed Bodhisattva Medicine King in this way, the Buddha of that day entered Parinirvana in the last watch of that night. Thereupon, having seen the Buddha's Parinirvana, Bodhisattva Medicine King was grieved and saddened and longed and yearned for the Buddha. Having prepared a pyre with sandalwood from the inner sea coast of Mount Sumeru, and will continue tomorrow. There's this, and you may have just caught this. I know, I'm sorry I'm stopping here, but I don't want to make these too long. But once again, the point I have to remind you of, there's this sliding time thing happening all the time. When the Buddha goes into extinction, it's not Buddha-ness, or Buddha, technically, that goes into extinction. This is part of our language limitations. It's the representation, the personage, the what we glue our identities to. It's a samsaric problem. Because Buddha, by any other name, it's just Buddha. It's experience. It's the Dharma of knowing. Yeah. So if you associate your enlightenment with a particular influence in your life, you're a samsaric being. You're going to use the identification of that influence as your, and you're going to attach yourself, right, to Buddha-ness. But in truth, once you attain Buddha-ness, enlightenment, the idea of attachment is kind of repulsive because it does nothing but glue you to the past. It's always experience, now into the next, now into the next. This is living. This is being, a verb. So when the Buddha goes into extinction, it's not the extinction of Buddha. It's simply the referential attachment to an identity. This is the whole story of Shakyamuni. This is what he said in the lifespan chapter. You guys still see me as the thing that is Buddha. But I'm not. I'm a thing who has experienced, uncovered, awakened Buddha. You too can do this. That's Mahayana. Okay? Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. I got a little animated today. Hope that's okay. Thanks for your support. Even if all you can do right now is like and subscribe, that's a propagation of Bodhisattva Act. So thank you. Thank you for doing that. If you can do more, there's all sorts of links in the description. You can get ebooks, buy print books, buy mandala. Of course, buy a mandala. Get yourself a mandala. If you have trouble with that, let me know. I will help. Beyond that, we have some incredible patrons in this Sangha who support financially every month through Patreon or direct to PayPal. To those people, I always give a special gratitude, not just for myself, but for all of us, right? Because they make this resource continue to grow. So thank you, guys and gals. In the meantime, be kind to yourself, take care of your health, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.